Well, last week was a special week when we got to hear about the senior high mission trip and the work that they did down in Oklahoma with the Indian Mission Conference down there, and it was a great time. And I asked a question at the beginning of that presentation, and the question is, what are we to be about? We, the church, what are we to be about? And the idea was, as we read from the Great Commission, Matthew 28, right, we talked about those are the church's marching orders. You know, Jesus is on the Mount of Olives, he's about to ascend, and he looks at his disciples, all 11, and he says, look, I'm leaving, but here's what you're to be about. You got to make disciples. You got to baptize people, and you're going to be empowered to do so. So that was the question about the church. What are we to be about? So today I want to ask a little bit different question. It's kind of the same question. And folks, these are simple sermons. These are right from the heart of the gospel. This is who we are and where we are. So the question today is, if that's what we are to be about, well then, who are we? What are we made up of? It sounds like a similar question, but it's just a little bit different. And what we're going to cover here today, I'm hoping you're familiar with. Now, last week, I told you, you know, if you ran into somebody at Giant and they said, hey, what's that Wayne Church all about? That you'd be able to say, well, we love and serve through Christ. And if they said, well, what does that look like? You'd be able to start rattling the things off of exactly what that looks like. Today, I hope to give you an answer. If somebody runs into you downtown here and they say, well, I know you go to that Wayne Church, but what are you about? You know, who are you? You'll be able to say, this is who I am. Okay, and that's the two parts of the Christian faith that we talk about. There's two parts in our DNA. There's two parts that we experience in life. And that is an inward part, and it's an outward part. There's an inward part that we hear in that, you know, that great parable of that we heard last week, the parable of the Good Samaritan 2 weeks ago, you know, to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. What is that? That's an inward faith, right? That's a vertical part. And then to love your neighbor as yourself, well, that's an outward faith. That's an outward part. That's a social gospel and a personal gospel. So you got the personal gospel on one side. That's your own spiritual discipline and how you're loving God and the experience, the journey that you're going on in your heart. And then you have the outward side. That's how you're treating other people. When they come together, that makes a complete faith. And if you only are experiencing one of these, you're only experiencing half the gospel. That's the idea here. And the scriptures put together such a beautiful, beautiful picture of this. Now, what John Wesley called this was sanctification. He said it's us becoming holy, you know, the way to perfection. Now, we never get perfect, but the whole idea behind this journey that we're taking is that today, as Christians, as being sanctified, being made a little more holy every day, today we love a little bit better than we did yesterday. And next week, we're a little kinder than we were last week. And next month, well, you know, we're a little more faithful than we were last month. This is that journey that we're talking about here. So there's two pieces of our DNA and who we are. It's the inward, the personal, and it's the outward, the social gospel. And both of those two things need to be wound together in order for us to be involved in a complete journey with Christ. And here's the thing that I want to tell you about today, and I'm not telling you anything new. I've talked to you about this before. And how important this is. God cares about all that. He cares about us being, you know, there for people and helping them see Christ too, through us, through the, you know, it's all the Holy Spirit. It's none of us. It's the Holy Spirit that empowers us to do that. God cares about all this stuff. He restores the world. He restores human beings, and he restores the brokenness that's in the world. Now, the truth is, these things are two very connected issues, because last week we said, you know, when God needs some work done in the world, he doesn't send a bunch of angels, he sends you, and he sends me. So in this personal side, as we're reading scriptures and going to Bible studies and worshiping and we're praying and we're doing all those vertical personal things, we're being transformed. What did we say last week? We're not in the church business, we're in the transformation business. Last week we were talking about transforming, but now I'm talking about transforming ourselves so that when other people see us, they're transformed too. That's what we're all about. God cares about all that kind of stuff. He sends us out. He sends people, all right? So this is what it looks like in life, you know? You get up in the morning, and if you're married and you're a husband, you get up in the morning, the first thing you do before your feet hit the ground is, Lord, help me to be a better husband today, you know? If you're a wife, you say, Lord, help me to be a better wife today. And that's the first thing you do. You get out of bed, and then you Your feet hit the floor. You see the kids at the breakfast table. Lord, help me to be a better parent today. Then you get in your car and you head down the Schuylkill Expressway, you know, Alex Trepper, or wherever you go. You get on the train and you're saying, Lord, help me to be more patient with traffic today. You know, it's this gradual sanctification that goes on. And what happens is, as we're being transformed, a lot of stuff just starts to become normal. Just starts to become everyday life for us. So tomorrow we're a little bit better at it than we were yesterday. This is how the world is transformed. You know, and then you get to a point, like we talked about last week, you get to a point where doing these things are just automatic. It's normal. You don't even see it anymore. And you're sanctified, and you really see yourself, and you think of how you used to be, and you say, wow, God, thank you for transforming me. And then everyone else around you is transformed also. You know, as individual Christians, we're transformed. And then we're transformed as a church. And then the world around us is transformed. So in the church, we have lots of different sermons. We have those sermons about the inward gospel, the inward faith, and how we're supposed to be getting into spiritual disciplines and so forth. And we have the outward gospel. We have those sermons about how we're to be going out and feeding the hungry and doing those things. And here's what a lot of people come to me sometimes. They say, you know, we're really good at this Wing food pantry. My gosh, we've got partnerships with school districts and preschools and, oh my gosh, hospitals and senior centers. There's people involved in this like has never been involved before. But then somebody will come to me and say, well, you know something? Why aren't we involved in gun violence? And I say, you know, if that's a passion of yours, we got to lead that. We got to get involved. Because the truth is, every one of you has a passion inside. And some of it's going to bend towards fairness and justice. And some of it's going to bend towards love and mercy. Some people are going to hear that somebody's hungry, and they're going to react. And they're going to go. And somebody's going to hear about eradicating racism, and they're going to go. But it's different for it takes all of us to come together and do these things. So it's not that we're not paying attention to one area. It's that the individual believer has a passion, and the church starts to develop its passion as those passions float towards the top and bubble out and change the broken world. But we're interested in all of it. And we're just one of the franchises of the body of Christ, okay? There's hundreds around here. And they all got to be about doing the same thing. They've all got to be about engaging in this. The evangelical, the personal gospel, the inward gospel, and the social, the outward gospel. It takes both to complete our faith. They go hand in hand. We have to be actively engaged. And Jesus talks about in this parable that I just told you, right? He talks about it in this parable. And he also talks about it in probably the two commandments that we read the most. And you know what that is. He talks about what I said at the beginning. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. It's a cross. It's two things. It's right there in the middle. That's there. And if you have to think about it, it's social and it's personal. And it's always been that way. It'll always be that way. So we hear this reading from Matthew's gospel, this parable this morning, you know, and this is hard news for some people, you know. Do you remember what the criteria is that I read to you? The criteria for the judgment. It's a parable of judgment. The criteria is not the king saying to the goat or the sheep. The king doesn't say to the goat or the sheep, well, how deep was your personal relationship with me? He doesn't say, well, how well do you know the Holy Scriptures? Did you get a gold star in Bible study? No, he's not talking about that. He's talking totally about social gospel issues here. It's so important to him. You know, and those goats are starting to walk away, and they're going, well, we didn't know it was you. You didn't have the same robe on. You didn't have a name tag. We didn't know it was you. Why didn't you tell us? And Jesus says, well, if you didn't do it to the least of these, those who are pushed down and made to feel small, you didn't do it to me. This is serious business. This is really, really serious stuff. And in the scriptures, that's why we love it when we find this compelling picture. We find the compelling picture of the social and the personal gospel coming together, and they're all in one. And that's why Wesley tells us you can't be that faithful person. It can't be real in your life if you can't help but it coming out in your hands and your voice and your feet and all the things you're living every day. It changes you. It's who you are. That's why we get in that old church van with middle schoolers and drive 5 hours so we can pick up a hammer and nails and a screw gun and a saw and do those things. Who in the right mind would do that? Nothing about the middle schoolers, just about taking time to go do work in somebody else's house. So I just need to ask you this question. Do you understand these two parts of the gospel? This is really, really important, all right? Because if all you have is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and you're not doing this other stuff, you're missing half the gospel. Half of it isn't in there. And that's really, really important for all of us. Okay. So really, that's where we are. That's the important part of it. We need to get down to the best part of the service here today, and that's when you hear from the voices themselves. We have four people that are going to come speak to you now who are on the Pittsburgh Project. I'm going to ask Miss Leonard if she would come up and start us off today.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Leonard, and this was my first year going on the Pittsburgh Project. And I was going to start off with 1 Peter 3:8, which is on our shirts, but Juan already read that for us this morning, so it was a perfect lead-in. And I thought I'd just give you a little background first on the Pittsburgh Project and what our days looked like. The Pittsburgh Project has been around for 34 years, and their mission is to develop servant leaders and uphold the dignity of vulnerable homeowners. And I got to see that in action this week. And you'll see some pictures running through as we speak this morning. So Wayne Younger is the executive director, and he was amazing this week. He really knows how to connect with middle schoolers but still also reach out to the adult leaders that were there. And if you'd like to know more about the Pittsburgh Project, you can check out their website. There's also a video on YouTube that shows highlights from our week. And there were about 200 people there this week, middle schoolers and their leaders. So it was a full house. And Ross is also here, as you saw earlier, so you can also talk to him some after. But we left Monday morning and returned Friday afternoon. Monday we drove, stopped for some lunch, and arrived in Pittsburgh early afternoon. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday were our work days. So a typical day started around 6:30 in the morning. We had breakfast a little after 7, went to devotional, had some worship time, and one of the funniest parts was the college leaders do a goofy skit, which we all enjoyed in the morning. Showed us that we can all be silly. We'd gather up our supplies, head out to the work site. We'd eat lunch there with our homeowner, pray with them, eat together, get back to work. And then Matt usually treated us to something sweet to end our day with, so we'd often have some ice cream. Head back, have free time, get showered. As you can imagine, we were pretty sweaty and dirty by that time of the day. We'd have dinner, more group discussion, worship, and then there was usually a fun activity for the kids, and then lights out around 11. So it was a pretty full day. Ashley will plan to tell you more about our homeowner afterwards, but I just wanted to share a couple of my favorite moments from the week. I think the biggest thing was just watching the kids learn to confidently use power tools, post diggers, build railings, stain, and seeing their eagerness every day to greet our homeowner and her 5 cats. I'll also never forget the windy, steep, narrow roads of Pittsburgh. I had no idea that that's what Pittsburgh was like. You also learn something about the people you're with. I was lucky enough to work with Matt, Cole, Charlie, Megan, and Ashley on my project. And I learned that Matt does not like bridges. We had to go over a super high bridge every day to get to our home. And it was really high. There was a stop sign in the middle of it, so you had to stop and let one car at a time pass. And there were huge potholes. So every morning we said a prayer that we would make it across, and we obviously did. I also enjoyed listening to the kids reflect about biblical truths and the impact that TPP had on them over the week. They were even great about doing things like cleaning up trash. We had a huge bin of trash at our work site that a raccoon got in one day, and it was all over the yard when we arrived, and they even did that with joy. And just seeing their sense of accomplishment at the end, that they had built this railing, cleaned up her yard some, put on a new porch railing, and just thinking about how happy that would make Tina, our homeowner. I saw God all week in the kids and the impact they had on Tina. She thanked us many times, and one time she told me that she thought nobody would ever come to help her. I also felt moved and connected to God during Wayne's message each day, and also the music. Being in a sanctuary filled with over 100 kids and leaders all singing along was truly powerful. This was my first time, and I would highly recommend going. You're going to have a middle schooler, if you are a middle schooler, even if you don't. I was the only parent, actually. Matt, Tom, and Joe didn't obviously have kids there, and they still went along. I would highly recommend it. I hope everyone gets a chance to do it. And one thing that Wayne reminded us of while we were there was that what we felt in Pittsburgh shouldn't stay in Pittsburgh. It should come home with us. So So I think as we're back here in Wayne, we're trying to remember that there are people here who need our help as well. And one of the songs that I didn't know, but actually I found out Nick told me they've sang in the morning contemporary service, is Reckless Love by Corey Asbury. And I just wanted to end with one of the parts of that song. And oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. It chases me down, fights till I'm found, leaves the 99. And I couldn't earn it, and I don't deserve it. Still, you give yourself away. The overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love of God. So mark your calendars. It's always the second week of July, and hope some of you can partake in the Pittsburgh Project next year.
Good morning. My name is Ashley Leonard, and I also went on the Pittsburgh Project this year, which was my first year going. Our homeowner's name was Tina Tucker, and in her situation, there had been two landslides on either side of her house, one that had happened 3 years ago and the other around 3 months ago. Because of this, there is no road access, so no trash truck, no mail, and no packages came straight to her house. In addition, she also had vertigo, so it was very hard for her to get up and down her steps. Surprisingly, my favorite memory was the rain that happened on Thursday. Since Tina had vertigo, she didn't feel well a lot of the time, and so there were no chances for us to communicate with her. But the rain gave us an opportunity. We talked for an hour under her porch, which was great. We talked through her challenges and her problems, and then on a lighter note, we talked about her five cats, told fun stories, and talked about all the landslides that tended to happen in Pittsburgh. I saw God this week in the worship music. The songs were all very good, and we all came together as a community and sang and sometimes danced along to them. The last night we were there, we talked about biblical truths, and one of them stood out to me. That was, you get more out of giving than receiving, which is very cliche because you hear it all the time, but it's true. The 3 workdays we had, we built a railing for her stairs, a railing for the porch, and we worked on her roof. When we finished, we were ahead of schedule, and we had a big sense of accomplishment. And it also felt good that we had helped Tina. TPP, or the Pittsburgh Project, was really fun and a great experience. It was awesome to get to know our homeowner, Tina Tucker, and to help her and her situation. She taught us to never give up as she never did, and I will absolutely go next year and encourage all youth to go. Thank you.
Hey, my name's Andrew. I just recently went on the Pittsburgh Project. So I saw Jesus in many ways, but I'm only gonna focus on one. Our homeowner, Mrs. Paris, was one of the nicest ladies I've ever met. She made us sandwiches, she gave us snacks, and she kept us hydrated throughout the day. So that may not seem like much, but to further understand it, I'm going to read you the parable of the widow's offering from Mark 12, verses 41 to 43. Jesus sat down opposite of the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money in the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came in and put 2 very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she could live on." So even though she, like, sliced tomatoes and stuff like that, it may not seem like much, but she could have kept the watermelon and the tomatoes for herself, but instead she gave it out for us, and I thought that was really cool and interesting. Here are some reasons why I would go again. There's a good feeling that you get when you know that just by showing up and helping someone out, their life is going to be changed forever. You also get a lot more love poured into you than you give out, like from the homeowner, from the counselors, to just the Pittsburgh Project themselves. Everyone's super nice there. It's amazing. You also get to make new friends and have a better relationship with the ones you already have. Even if you can't go and spend like 5 days going to Pittsburgh, because you have like work or school, there is other stuff you can do right here. One thing that the Pittsburgh Project said was many houses on the outside are just have like nice paint or something, but on the inside they're a mess, and that's not like the papers that are like papers everywhere and stuff. It's the families are being torn apart. So if you talk to that school kid who's getting bullied or the new guy at work, God values that just as much as he does when you're going out and doing construction. Jesus didn't say go out to Pittsburgh and go do some work there. He said go and help out the community and help your love your neighbor as yourself. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Dustin. I also went on the Pittsburgh Project mission trip. And first off, it is one of the best things you can do for yourself. It is an amazing feeling when you've accomplished something great. And all in all, it's really fun. Throughout the week, we've just done some amazing things with building and reconstruction and also building a relationship with our homeowners. But my favorite part of the week was what's called homeowner night. That was Wednesday night, and pretty much what it is that's a time when we allow and invite our homeowners to come and join us for dinner and worship, and also gives us an opportunity to thank and commend them for all the stuff that they have done for us. And the reason why that was so great is because it gave us a chance to give our thank you to our homeowner, Miss Paris, as she has been really, really nice to us and really, really grateful, as Andrew mentioned. But also with it, when I got the chance to speak and to thank Miss Paris on behalf of our entire group, I could see her smile, and when I got a chance to hand her a flower, I knew that she was also very grateful for what we have done. And then we got to hear her speak about how it's more than just building and reconstructing things. It's more about building their relationship and having someone near them. Now, I knew going into this that it would be more than just building, but I didn't realize the extension of what the relationship can actually do. People there of other homeowners were crying, and they were calling people family. And when you hear things like that, you know that you have done something great and that you have done something to change someone's life. And I think that's a great feeling. I think that's great to know. And that's why I would love to come back again. Also, of course, when we're out doing all that hard work right before bed, we got to let out all the energy we still have left in us. So we'll be playing football. And also, if you see one of those pictures, it has all of us outside with a ladder. That's a thing that we created called Ladder Gang. And it was just this running joke throughout the entire week. It was quite the thing, not going to lie. But also with it, we talked about how God, we're there to answer God's call. And we could have chosen to spend our week staying home or going on vacation or going to the beach. But we chose to come to Pittsburgh, and we chose to answer God's call. And I think that's something that you need to think about and you need to remember. And pretty much throughout the week, I could see God coming and helping us as well. I saw God in our homeowner, Miss Paris, as the God's love that we gave to her in her home, she gave back to us and how she cared for us. I saw God in her dog, as every time we wanted to take a break and stop and rest, the dog would always show up and sort of use our mind and help us get ourselves ready to go back and work again. And Matt was actually telling me about a joke that happened a couple years ago where dog spelled backwards is God. And it's interesting to think about, because it's like, oh, this is probably his way of saying, okay, let me help you relax, let me help you settle yourself down, and then get back to work. And I think that's very interesting to think about. But also I thought I saw God in everyone that was there, not just our group, not just Matt's group, but everyone there. We're all there to answer God's call. We're all there to help each other out. And there was a verse from Mark 12, verse 31, which states, "Thou shalt love their neighbor as they love themselves." And pretty much that means we ourselves take great care of ourselves, such as, you know, we brush our teeth, we take showers, we get ourselves dressed, we make sure we look good, because we're going to be out and we want to make sure that we look as best as we can. And I think if you give that sort of love towards people in our community and our neighbors, then it just makes the world a better place. It makes them happier, it makes you happier. And at the end of the day, you just feel great about it. And so with this, if I could come back again next year, of course I would, because there's a lot to learn. I remember this year, we talked about how you shouldn't take pity on those who don't have less than you, because if you take pity, that would mean that you are seeing them as less than, or they're not as high in society. And God and the Bible tells us that God loves everybody equally. And if you were to take pity on them, then that means you're not. And that's part of the five truths that Michelle stated, and that pretty much, instead of taking pity, you want to have sympathy. And so the five truths are sympathy, being like-minded, loving one another, being courageous, and being humble. And that's something that you need to use throughout your everyday life. And when you're being in front of other people and talking to other people, you need to remember those things when you do it. So it's a great lesson. It's also a great learning opportunity. It's a great mission, which is not only to reconstruct and help people out with their homes, but also build a relationship and almost build a family with them and make sure they know they're loved by everybody around them. And also, it's just a great reward. You do all this, you're in conditions that may not be the best, you're in the beating hot sun, you're working constantly for 6 hours, you have no Wi-Fi, but at the end, you know, you get home and you're on the van and you're thinking, wow, I did that. I did this. I made someone else smile. And that's sort of the best feeling you can have. And that's why I encourage any of you guys to get the chance to go to Pittsburgh, or you get the chance to help out the community, or you get the chance to go on another mission trip. I encourage you to go, because it really does feel good. And you don't have to be the smartest and most skilled in anything you do. You'll learn, and you also have a ton of fun. So thank you for having me, and I'll pass it over to Pastor Tom.
Aren't they great? That's awesome. You know, and the greatest part about this is, you know, these are our middle schoolers getting up here talking about this. You can feel the heart. You can feel the passion in there. So it goes on to senior high, and then it goes to either Costa Rica or Haiti or someplace. It just goes on and on. It's a great thing. For me, this was my first time in the Pittsburgh Project, and the blessing for me is I got to spend it with them. Is Megan here this morning? I didn't see Megan. Is Megan? There's obviously, we heard from four. There were 12 of us on the group. I know we have Arjun and Neil up here with us today. It was a great experience. So for me, first time on the Pittsburgh Project, spending time with these middle schoolers, getting to know them. Okay, the whole ladder gang thing, I don't get it, all right? You know, you saw that picture. It's the guys. All the guys would get the ladders off the bunk beds, and they would walk around the hall of the dormitory going, ladder gang, ladder gang. And then I just had to realize, oh, it's middle school. My kids are 25 and 21. I had to reset for a second. It's just being silly, and you just go with it. So thanks for the plug on Ladder Gang there. I understand that. That's what makes them unique, right? They're middle schoolers. Somebody asked John Wesley one time. John Wesley, what makes a United Methodist? What makes a Methodist? They weren't United then. What makes a Methodist unique? And John Wesley said, well, you know, what you can tell a Methodist because, well, not really because of the way we worship, you know, because we don't have a liturgy that stands out. We kind of use what everybody else uses. Doctrine, no, we don't have a doctrine. We kind of believe what everybody else believes. But John Wesley said, you can tell a Methodist because a Methodist is somebody who's really serious about loving God with all they have, their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And at the same time, a Methodist who is someone who's really, really serious about loving their neighbors just as they love themselves. And when you get, and when you find that person, that's what defines a Methodist. So I got to ask you this question again. You know, do you understand the two sides of the gospel? Are you living that out in your life? When you go out every day, are both of those two sides of the gospel playing a part? Are you living it? Because that's who we are. That's our DNA. And if you haven't gotten both of those sides, you've only gotten half of the gospel. So here's my invitation. We're made for a relationship with God. We're made for loving God and allowing God to love us. And through that sanctification, we're made to go out and heal a broken world for whatever venue God gives us, for every person that we bump up against in this world. We're all called to be his servants. Every one of us is an instrument of the redemption of God. And that's who we're called to be. That's who we are. So when we ask that question, who are we? There you have it. So if you're out there someday and they say, I know you're a Christian, who are you? You can lay it down for them. Actually, you might want to have them sit down. Give them the whole thing. Tell them about your inward and your outward gospel and how that turns into something every day in your life. So here's the invitation. There's 100 different ways in this church or this community to get involved in both sides of the gospel. You know, we've got feeding ministries, we got our mission trips, or it's only going to be a couple of months till we start talking about Costa Rica, you know. And some of these kids have already graduated. Some of these kids have already been to Costa Rica on that mission trip, all right? You don't have to be a certain age or live a certain lifestyle. We can work it out that you can go. The invitation, the challenge is, what are you going to do? What part of this social gospel are you playing? And are you in tune with that other part, that inward gospel? Because we're all called to do this. So